GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1350, June 5th, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Suwanee, Georgia. Suwanee, Georgia turns out to be a northeastern, made sure I got that right, suburb of Atlanta. It's just right off of Interstate 85, where I'm backed into a dock, waiting to get unloaded. I had a 11 p.m. appointment Eastern time, so I got here a little bit earlier than that, and they had me wait probably about an hour, and then the guy came out and told me to back into door number one, which I did, and I've been sitting in door one for a while, and now it's 12:20, so it's about an hour and 20 minutes after the appointment, and they haven't begun unloading it yet, but they'll get to it. Sooner or later. It's a 24/7 place, so they'll get to it. So I spent the night last night there at outside of Memphis. Fairhaven, Mississippi was the closest town nearby, according to my GPS, close to Olive Branch. So you have Whitehaven, Fairhaven, Olive Branch. Olive Branch probably being the biggest Memphis suburb that's actually in the far northern part of Mississippi, on the Mississippi side of the line. And so that was about 400 miles up here from there. And so I left there, I think it was about 11:15 when I left there, Central Time, and then pretty much drove, apart from stopping once to go into the fast food joint and get something to eat, and then I got right back out and started driving again. Pretty much nonstop until I went to the Petro truck stop there at Atlanta, on the west side of Atlanta. It's inside of 285, Hallowell Parkway. And so I parked there, went inside, got something to eat, and then hung out a little bit, because my Qualcomm, according to the directions on the Qualcomm, it said don't show up to this place, more than an hour before your appointment time. And so I was able to kind of time it so that I was able, I left there and I got here about, I guess it was about a quarter after 10 Eastern time when I arrived here. So, fairly nice day today. It was kind of hot and humid, as to be expected. Looks like it's rained here just a little bit somewhere, because I can see a few little puddles here and there of water, and looks like their parking lot was a little bit wet, but that's pretty much on its way to being evaporated at this point. So, but otherwise, it was just, kind of an uneventful day. Before I get started, I want to go ahead and talk about yourbabycanread.com. Your Baby Can Read is a truly revolutionary infant reading system. It was developed by leading infant researcher Dr. Robert Titzer, who taught his own daughter to read when she was just 9 months old. Your Baby Can Read taps into children's natural ability to learn language in the first 5 years of life. The reading system includes videos, books, flashcards, and games. Go to www.yourbabycanread.com to watch some real home videos of infants and toddlers reading. A six-month-old recognizing words on flashcards, an 18-month-old reading sentences, a toddler reading Charlotte's Web. Try it yourself risk-free and see what your child can do. Visit www.yourbabycanread.com. Give the lifelong gift of early literacy to your child. And that would apply to a grandchild, or you could give this as a gift, etc., etc. So check that out. So let's see here. I've got the last two comment files that, you know, Scott Mitchell had sent me a bunch of comment files for the podcast. And I've got some news stories that I've been kind of collecting, and maybe a little bit of email mixed in there. And then, you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit. I guess first I'm going to talk a little bit. You know, Scott Mitchell, you know, that sends me these voice files, you know, he also, you know, we're communicating privately through private voice files back and forth. And so yesterday and today I kind of went through the latest files that he sent me, I guess probably upwards of 2 weeks ago, and responded. And I enjoy doing that because it causes me to oftentimes see things in a little bit different way. And, you know, let me just start off by saying this. I think that we should just do away, perhaps just do away with religion. And I think that's kind of happening. You know, there are fewer people that go to church. You know, you look at Europe in particular. Now, Europe isn't a really good example otherwise, but, you know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, just kind of not gone to church. That's been one of the things that I've always been grateful for, is the fact that I was not raised in a church. I was, you know, would kind of go to church on occasion, you know, with my grandmother if we were visiting her, or, you know, my grandparents. Or sometimes we'd go on, you know, I'd always looked forward to going to vacation Bible school in whatever little town we happened to be living in Kansas. But, so I really didn't ever have the Christian, you know, all these doctrines and dogmas kind of crammed down my throat. You have to believe this. Didn't ever have that, that never happened to me. And I've been very grateful for that, because I've been able to, out of my own curiosity, sort of pursue it on my own and kind of, you know, pick and choose what I want. You know, what do I believe? What sounds right? Do these people seem like they're doing the right thing? Etc., etc. And I've tried going to church two or three times, you know, for short periods, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't keep doing it, because I could see, it was just so obvious to me, how fake and phony people are when they go to church. You know, they're paying the preacher. The preacher in the typical church is a paid whore. He's paid to do his little song and dance, religious soft shoe. And the really good ones end up on TV and radio. They can turn on their emotions like, you know, just like turning on a water spigot. And that's what people are paying for. And if the preacher can't do that, if he has a conflict, if that causes a conflict in him, and he can't do it, he's out of there quick. The typical church goes through preachers like water. You know, they're switching, a lot of churches are switching preachers constantly. And it's because they're looking for the best ego sucker. Someone to suck on the slimy egos of the people that pay. They're paying for their whore, basically. And you look at the, you know, they've taken words about the truth. You know, the Bible, you know, good book, a lot of good stuff in there. A lot of it, has kind of been misinterpreted. There's some stuff that's missing, actually. out of it, but it's probably been deliberately taken out of it over the centuries, but a lot of good stuff in there. But the problem is that these churches have kind of made entire regimens out of these words. And so oftentimes you have the very worst people in church. Worst in the sense that they're really not seeking the truth. They're really not seeking their real identity. They're taking the words about the truth and sort of wrapping themselves up, an externalized way. And then they kind of smile at each other and I'm okay, you're okay. It's, they might as well be going to a bar and kind of crying in their beer and all commiserating together, because it's the same effect. Exactly the same thing. You can take anything and abuse it that way. I mean, literally anything you can think of, human beings can take and abuse that way and turn it into a means of trying to feel better about themselves in the wrong way. And furthermore, to distance themselves from their genuine identity. You know, if I was going to start I wouldn't start a religion, but what I would like to do, if I could, I'd love to see a movement of people that would just be genuine. Just find their, be their genuine selves. Have the guts to just be themselves. You know, it's tough. It's really tough to even know who you are. It's really tough with all the pressures around us. It's tough to know what our genuine identity is. And oftentimes it becomes impossible for us to know, because there's so many distractions. We become externalized, we become brainwashed in various ways, responding to the pressure in the wrong way, and then that separates us from who we could be. It separates us from that natural identity that we're born with, and that we're pretty close to when we first come out of the womb. And the real function of a parent, of parents, is to provide an environment in which that natural identity can blossom, kind of protect it to the point where it can blossom, and then it's on its own, and it's got its own connection to its maker, to its own common sense. That's the function of a parent. But no, what do parents do? The parents oftentimes, you see them screaming and yelling at kids and so on and so forth. And oftentimes it's, the parents are using animosity and to do it, because the parents feel guilty. The parents look at those innocent eyes looking at them, the eyes that are more innocent than they are, and they try to screw up the kids' perceptions. They try to screw up their minds so that they don't see what they see. And if they see it, they better damn well keep their mouth shut. So our problem as human beings is that we're not genuine enough. We're just not genuine. We're not enough of us are genuine. And I'd love to see people. That's really what I'd like to see, is see people become genuine. I don't want to be anybody's guru. I just want to, if, as best I can, help people become themselves. And I don't care what that is. I want them to become themselves. I want them to become genuine. And if enough of us became genuine, we would naturally know the difference between right and wrong. We wouldn't have to have all these written rules. We would just simply know. We come out of the womb knowing. A few podcasts ago, I was talking about this study I heard about where they took these babies, you know, and I'm assuming they were prelingual children, you know, before they learned how to talk, so they must have been, you know, so many months old, not even a year old. But they took these babies, a number of them, I don't know how many, I wish I knew the details of the study. They took these babies and they presented that, you know, they had toys, and I don't know if they did it with real toys or an image, how they did it exactly. But they had three toys. One toy was trying to go up the hill. And then they had a helper toy, a toy that was trying to help the one kind of push it up the hill. And then they had an evil toy, an adversary toy that was pushing the toy that was trying to go up the hill, was trying to push it back down and hinder it from going up the hill. And they did this with a number of kids. They just showed this to a number of kids. And then afterwards, and I don't know how they did it, I'm assuming they kind of wired them up and to kind of measure their physiological reactions. They had a positive reaction to the toy that was trying to go up the hill. They had a positive reaction to the helper toy, the toy that was trying to help the other toy go up the hill. But very interestingly, they had a negative reaction to the toy that was trying to prevent the toy that was trying to get up the hill, trying to push it back. They had a negative reaction to that. That tells me that little babies come out of the womb having this innate sense, knowing the difference between right and wrong. Obviously, it's in a rudimentary state, but it's there. And these babies were young enough that, you know, where, you know, they really hadn't been influenced that much by their parents and the culture around them. But that knowing the difference between right and wrong is kind of latent. It's not dominant. We have to choose it. We have to want it. We really have to want it. But if we could all just become genuine, enough of us become genuine, things would turn around, things would improve. They really would. They would improve on their own because people would just naturally be moral. And, you know, you wouldn't even have to have rules because if people are genuine people, have a built-in sense of right and wrong, genuine people won't violate that. They won't violate that sense of right and wrong. You could take the rules away. They're not going to rape. They're not going to rob. They're not going to murder. They're not going to steal, as I've said many times. They're not going to pillage. Because that conscience, you know, that identity, that genuine source of identity is more important than anything else. You know, but we hear the term brainwashed. Brainwashed this, brainwashed that. This person's brainwashed. This group is brainwashed. Brainwashed from what? Brainwashed from what? Let's examine that term. Brainwashed from what? You know, what are they brainwashed from? That implies, if you just look at that logically, that implies, well, there must have been some original identity. There must be something original there that they've been brainwashed away from. You know, it's interesting when you look at words and how they're, you know, our language and how it's put together. Oftentimes you can, you know, it's right in our language if we just look at it. Brainwashed from what? Brainwashed from that original identity. You know, and so brainwashed, corrupted is another, you know, we have a corrupt system with corrupt people and therefore, what does that mean? That means that their identity has been corrupted. All of our identities have been corrupted to varying degrees. By externalized pressures, by the, you know, it starts with our dysfunctional families, school, so on and so forth. We've all been sort of pressured and then we react to the pressure in a wrong way, and that's what, and then we become corrupted. React with resentment, you become corrupted. Simple as that. It's actually very simple. If we could all just become genuine, forget about the religion, forget about trying to tweak this rule and tweak that rule. The real root of the thing is that if we could all become genuine, just genuine to whatever identity that we're born with, our problems would disappear. They really would. So, anyway, let me go ahead and play this first comment from Scott Mitchell. Now, this is about, I'm going to play the short one first. This is 3 minutes and 27 seconds, so let's listen to this first one.
Tom, you're talking about something in electronics, which I know something about, as you know. I used to work in the field, so I'm going to explain it to you. But, and of course, I was trying to work with you on this very problem, which was that squealing power inverter that you had in the truck. You get yourself a more higher wattage power supply for the laptop, I guess it was, and you're finding that A, it runs cooler, and B, it doesn't set off the squeal as much, and you're figuring various reasons why that's going on. But let me tell you what's really going on. What you've managed to do is snag a more efficient power supply. It's all about efficiency, Tom. It's not about whether it's rated. If you rate something low, it could be a very efficient power supply, even if it's a low, you know, a lower wattage one. And just because you push it up to the end of its ratings doesn't mean it's going to become suddenly less efficient. What you're talking about is efficiency. How much power are you actually getting out of it for the amount of power you put in? And usually, in the case of electronics, the power in, power out equation, what is lost is heat. That's where the inefficiency is almost always. In fact, I will say it is always. You lose it in the form of heat. So power in, power out, and the difference in the converter or power supply or whatever you're doing with that, you know, when you're doing power conversion, is efficiency. Okay, I had to pause for a second there. I think you heard the phone ringing. So what you've run into there is a situation where the power supply you had was inefficient, and that's why you were pumping a lot of power into it, probably more power than you're pumping into this current power supply, and yet you weren't getting nearly as much out, and the difference was all that heat you were getting. You were using it to heat your truck. It was electronic heat. And now you've got a situation where you've got a more efficient power supply, and you're losing a lot less of it as heat, and consequently also not getting near the threshold of that alarm as much. I was hoping to just be able to beef up that alarm or that inverter there so that we could keep that from happening. But I guess that's another way to fix the problem, or inadvertently as it might have been, is to get a more efficient power supply plugged into it and lower the load in that manner. So that's what you ended up doing. And I have noticed that we weren't hearing the beeping all the time either. So, good deal. Good deal. Thank God for more efficient electronics, which things are getting all the time. Technology and electronics, they keep trying to find ways to make it more efficient. Because let's face it, if you get a TV set running, and one draws X amount, and the other draws, you know, 20% less than that, and you won't get the same picture and everything out of it, which one would you rather have, you know? Unless there's a dramatic difference in price, you'd be better off running the more efficient ones. Refrigerators, big time on this. They're trying to get them more efficient so that you get the same amount of cooling for less electricity. It's all about efficiency.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. I'm glad to know that. Now, Apple makes two different power supplies for their laptops. For the regular MacBook, they make the, I think it's, they're calling it a 65-watt power supply. That's the one that this thing had been sold with originally. It was an open, so-called open box value, and they gave me a 65-watt power supply, and it should have been an 85-watt power supply. And then Apple also sells an 85-watt power supply. I think it's about $20 more. So the 65-watt one was so much, and then The 85 watt one is like $20 more. But you're right, it is more efficient. It, you know, I'm feeling of it right now. The machine's been running for a while. Now, when it was rebooting, I rebooted the machine before I started recording the podcast. And when it was rebooting, obviously, when you boot the machine up, the typical computer, and this includes Apple machines, it's for a few seconds there, it's drawing the maximum amount of power that it possibly can, because you got all this activity going at the same time. You know, the hard drive's just going like crazy. You know, it's as hard as it can, among other things, and you're pushing the processor as well. So, you know, it did beep a few times while the machine was booting up after it was booted. You know, it immediately stopped and it just doesn't beep. So it's, you know, and as I say, this power supply is just warm, not hot. That other one, the smaller one, really did get hot. You know, it really did put off a lot of heat, so it was less efficient. So you pay more, $20 more, you get a more efficient power supply from Apple anyway. You know, and I've noticed, you know, I've had my fair share of laptops over the years, and some of those bricks, those power bricks, get hot. They really do get warm, and some of them aren't as bad, but, you know, there you go. You know, you're probably looking at inefficient power supplies for the most part. You know, why are they getting so hot? So, that's interesting to know. Anyway, let me go ahead and place Scott's second podcast, or his second comment here. So here we go, podcast comment.
Okay, Tom, in the podcast now you're talking about this Jeffersonian philosophy, or Jeffersonian age philosophy called natural law, and saying we ought to teach this to our children and such. Well, I don't know what all exactly natural law would include, but I would have to think that, you know, it has to do with the idea. I mean, I've heard the podcast. In fact, I think I referred you, I was initially one of the ones that referred you on to it, because it's charming and it does have some great basic principles in it. But, you know, he's also sometimes very good about saying exactly what the negative points are of things. So I don't know if he ever mentioned this, but in any case, natural law, if it's what I would think it would be just what it implies, that there's a natural order to things, that in our gut we just know what's natural and what isn't. We know that, and therefore, if we can feel it in our gut, and we just know that's the case, you know, if a kid goes ew at it or whatever, it's just naturally wrong. And we know when things are naturally right and wrong. All right, in a nutshell, I'm sure that's what it means, you know, stated very succinctly, that we, if we are allowed to, we just naturally know what's right and wrong.
Okay, let me interrupt. You know, it's fascinating that, you know, because I hadn't listened to this file at all. And it's kind of interesting that it kind of coincided with what I was talking about, you know, the experiment with the babies. You know, the babies naturally know. It's just built into them. It's already wired in there, at least a very rudimentary level of it. And so there is something to this idea of natural law. You know, what are we brainwashed from?
I know that aligns very much up with what you view conscience as being. But let's go with some of the things that they saw as being naturally right and wrong back then, and see if you think they're still naturally right and wrong. Because some of the things that would have been unheard of back then, obviously, being gay would have been something that had better be very a deep, dark, kept secret, because that would have been absolutely wrong. You know, no doubt about it, you would have been seen as an extremely perverted, ungodly, I don't know what words they would use, but I'm sure that if they could, maybe they did actually string you up for it, you know. And they might even quote Bible verse, you know, go to the Old Testament and quote Bible verse where it talks about how wrong it is. And in the Old Testament, I'm not making this up, it's in the Old Testament, saying that if a man lies with a man, he shall be killed.
Okay, now, let me interrupt. Is the Bible natural law? Does that really reflect natural law? That's a real question. Does that really, what's written in there, does that really, really reflect natural law? You know, I think it kind of points at it. It points at natural law, but does it really, truly reflect it? You know, that is a question.
That was the old law in the Old Testament. One of the many things you get killed for, by the way. Yeah, I mean, adulterers were killed. I mean, not obeying the Sabbath, and I could go on. But
now, what you're describing there are not natural laws. You're describing man-made laws. Not the same thing.
In any case, people could justify it. So, you know, natural law would have included the idea that gays would be a pariah, would be absolutely unacceptable in any way.
Let me interrupt again. Justify. How do you justify things? You justify things with words. You justify things with sort of man-made concepts. You know, when there's this one story in the Bible where Jesus, says something to the effect that the first person that's without sin, let them cast the first stone, and of course nobody casted a stone. That was natural law. You know, that was the real, Jesus was appealing to the real sense of right and wrong, as opposed to, you know, the written laws that people would be, he said, you'd be justified, you can go ahead and do it, you're justified, the law says you can do it, go ahead and cast those stones, but the one that's without sin, let him cast the first stone. You know, and that's sort of the difference between, you know, we can have written rules, and then we get all caught up in the words, and like, for example, you know, what is pornography, what is not pornography, you know it when you see it, type of thing. You know, and we can justify all kinds of things, you know, and we do it with words, we do it with our language, you know, tricks of language. That's not really the natural law. You know, the natural law that they're measuring in these experiments with the babies, having a negative reaction to the adversarial toy, trying to, you know, push the toy that's trying to get up the hill, push it back, hinder it from getting up the hill. That's really natural law. That's really what we're looking at. You can say, well, that's hard. That, you know, it's to a certain extent, it's hardwired in. Well, I can accept that. So, you know, and then that's what the natural law is what we become brainwashed from. That's what we become corrupted from. That's what we become separated from. And that's what we need to get back to in order to be genuine people.
Shape or manner. There'd not even be a thought for a second of any rights of gays whatsoever, let alone to get married. Period. Beyond that, what about interracial marriages? Blacks back in the area, back in that era, even if you were not of a mind that you thought it was right for them to be slaves, you probably, certainly though, would have not have agreed with a white woman dating a black man or vice versa. Interracial relationships would have been totally taboo. Natural law, you would have said, oh, no, that's just wrong. Birds of a feather, you know. We know about birds and a feather, you know, and you justify it. Quite honestly, the world back then was a lot smaller. And I would dare say that the opinions back then, even for men who might be more worldly, such as Jefferson, were frankly far more ignorant than today.
Let me interrupt again. I think You know, we have this idea that we're so sophisticated, we've got all this marvelous communication, we're just better somehow. We're more sophisticated, we know more, and our knowledge is better. But, you know, you go back and just listen to Thomas Jefferson Hour podcast. You know, and the things that they were talking about and the things that they wrote, they knew that, you know, there was a big debate when the country was put together. There was this huge debate about, you know, we need to get rid of slavery. It's wrong. You know, and they finally, what they did, they allowed for it, you know, with kind of allowing for a mechanism to get rid of it. But they allowed for it because otherwise the country couldn't have... you know, those original colonies couldn't have gotten together and formed a country because it was such a dividing issue. But people back then, there were people that knew that it was wrong, clearly. You know, there are people today, quite frankly, you think, oh, we're much more sophisticated today. There are people that just love to enslave other people. We just do it in different forms. You know, it may not be outright, but it's more subtle. We make slaves of each other. You've done it. I've done it. People have done it to us. All you got to do is resent, and you become a slave. Somebody can trick you into resenting. You're their slave, whether you like it or not. You're their slave. Resentment, by the way, is judgment. All you have to do is just judge someone. You know, hurl the mental thunderbolts in your mind. Person, place, or thing, and you become a slave to it. You either have to go along to get along, or you try to rebel and do the opposite. Either way, as long as you have that judgment, whether you're aware of the judgment or not, because oftentimes people bury it so they don't have to be aware of it, distract themselves from it, the knowledge of it. Whether you're aware of it or not, it's there, it's separating you from who you could be. It's separating you from being genuine. And the more judgment that you have, it snowballs more and more, and you become more and more of an externalized person. And therefore, much more, easily manipulated. And you're more of a, in other words, you're, another way of saying externalized person, you're more of a slave. You're a slave to the people around you. You're a slave to your stupid culture. And the culture can say that, oh, it's okay to eat people. If you're from Borneo, you know, their culture says, oh, hey, you know, eat more. You're feeling anxiety, you need to eat more people. Not eating enough people. You know, cook some kids up. You know, and your culture says that's fine. Culture can say that slavery's fine. Culture can say that all kinds of things are wrong, that are obviously wrong, are fine. And then it can, you know, and of course people end up seeing the world backwards, and so then they begin to outlaw things that are genuine. People are threatened by genuine. People love fake and phony. But, you know, those people back then, 200, 300 years ago, were far more sophisticated than we like to give them credit for. We like to think, oh, we're the cat's meow. We have all this communication. We've figured out all this technology. We're so much better than they are. We're not. We're worse. We've declined.
Because people today can know so much more things about the world and things that have happened in probably a year than somebody back then could have in a lifetime. And so it's sort of like talking to somebody who's...
Well, let me interrupt again. Sure, we have instant access to facts. It's wonderful. It's just amazing. Instant access to facts. You don't want to look something up, bang, look it up on your phone, look it up on your computer. You know instantly. Wonderful. Does that make you a better person? Does that instant access to facts make you know better the difference between right and wrong? I think not. you know, sure, you have access to facts and you can, you know, kind of read this and read that and historical accounts of this, historical accounts of that. People don't, by the way, very often. You know, why don't we learn from our past mistakes, you know, from people's past mistakes? We don't, you know, and therefore we're constantly repeating those mistakes. That's why history repeats itself, is because people don't learn, and then they end up progressing through the same thing that their ancestors did. Even though the only thing that gets better in this world is knowledge. You know, so knowledge doesn't make us better people. Knowledge doesn't give us a better knowing of right and wrong. It's just better knowledge. Makes us more efficient killers. Makes it possible to, you know, brainwashing more efficient. Wonderful, you know, look at what we have today, and look, you know, we've got wonderful brainwashing mechanisms in place. Now, those same things can be used, you know, it's like a tool. You can use a nuclear bomb for good. You can use it for evil. You can, a knife, for example, you can use a knife for a good purpose or you can use it for a bad purpose. It's just a tool. Same way with a gun, same way with anything else. You can take a tool, whether it's a physical tool or just knowledge about, you know, technological knowledge, use it for good, use it for evil. The knowledge simply makes everything more efficient. It doesn't make us better people. So when it comes right down to knowing the difference between right and wrong, you know, those people back then were just, they were every bit as sophisticated as we are today, and probably more so in many ways, because there, you know, there's some of us, it's always the best of times and the worst of times, always, because there are always people that are asking questions and asking, you know, really, you know, asking those, you know, and you can't really ask out in the world and find out the answers. You've got to, it entails a lot of asking yourself and looking at yourself. And those people back then, despite the fact that they didn't have as much knowledge as we do today, they were just as able as we are today to look at themselves, to look at their character. And that's what we really have to do to become genuine. That's really what we have to do. You know, the Bible, there's a Bible verse that says, the meek shall inherit the earth. Well, I would rewrite that. The genuine shall inherit the earth.
Lived on the farm all their life, and you tell them, there are people with little slanty eyes. Oh, no, come on. You know, that can't exist in this world. And they don't know any better. I mean, just take anybody who's lived in a very restricted environment. Well, back then, that's kind of what it was like. Is because they didn't have radio, they didn't have television, they didn't have, even the printing press was not all that widely available. Certainly they didn't have the internet and all the forms of instant communication we have now. Facts fly at the speed of light, and we're amassing knowledge at a rate that's just unheard of. It's just getting faster all the time. So the idea that somebody back then would have even close to the worldly view we do now is, it's, you know, you can't even begin to imagine what it's like to have been that closed off. So, of course, a lot of their natural law and viewpoints are based on a great deal of ignorance. And I'm not saying this in a bad way. I'm saying it in a factual way. They were ignorant of so many facts, and so they would draw a lot of wrong conclusions that we would never draw today because we know better. We've seen far more than almost anybody back then, including the forefathers of this country, could ever have dreamt of seeing. And I have to wonder if we could take them and put them in the middle of now, and I guess that's what Clay Jenkins tries to imagine.
Let me interrupt. If you go back, you know, 200 years ago, like you're talking about, 200, 300 years ago, age of 200 years ago, Age of Enlightenment, did they, you know, the basics of right and wrong. They knew, you know, they knew the same basics. Our knowledge, just because we have all this extra knowledge and technology about the world, about the universe, about how things work, does that change whether or not murder is wrong? Does that change whether or not stealing is wrong? Does that change whether or not raping is wrong? Does that change whether or not pillaging is wrong? No, it does not. There are people that want it to do that, and they have the knowledge, and then they try to twist it, you know, in the case of abortion. Oh, it's just a fetus. We're just using words. Call it a fetus. It's just a fetus. It's an unviable tissue mass. Let's kill it for the sake of convenience. And that's a case of using, not trying to use knowledge to modify what is right and wrong. Can't do it. It's just lying, really. So on the issues of right and wrong, they were just as sophisticated as we are. So knowledge does not change. No matter how good knowledge gets, it does not change the real definition of right and wrong. It just doesn't do it. It cannot do it. But you go back to that Adam and Eve story, tree of knowledge of good and evil. You know, Adam and Eve wanted to know, you know, they, you know, the whole idea was that they wanted to sort of be their own gods and sort of and be their own right and wrong, you know, redefine it. In a way, you could say they were trying to redefine it with knowledge, and that's what we're trying to do today. Can't do it. Right is right, wrong is wrong. Ain't gonna change.
And I don't think he can begin to imagine what it would be like and how Jefferson's own point of view would have been changed dramatically on any number of things that he might have believed in back then and wouldn't believe in now. He does a really good job of trying to imagine it, but I don't think he can entirely imagine how much different Thomas Jefferson and all of our forefathers would have been, the most worldly of people back then, if they could have suddenly had that world turned on its head with the kind of information we have now, and knowing where, not only that, but knowing where the world has gone, and learning even more about what human beings, you know, can do and have done. So I don't know. To teach that kind of philosophy to kids would almost seem to me to be akin to teaching ignorance, you know, because it is born of a very ignorant culture. I don't think that would, you'd want to teach that in school. Now, morality? Yeah, I think morality of some kind should be taught in school. We're going to have
Let me interrupt again. This idea of the Renaissance, you know, they mentioned it, you know, at least they did. I doubt if they do today. But it was mentioned in some of the textbooks I had. I vaguely remember it. And, you know, they could go through the whole thing. Why not? You know, the Renaissance was really important, you know, in the history, you know, in our modern history, you know, certainly in the last, you know, 300 years, the Renaissance was extremely important to history. And it's not even, you know, they just kind of glossed over it when I was in school in the textbooks. And, you know, why not go into all of that? And, you know, it's not teaching morality, it's simply teaching this is what they believed in natural law. This is what Thomas Jefferson believed. Why not teach that? It's not teaching you to believe that, this is what he believed. Take it or leave it. You know, these are the facts. Nothing but the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. But instead, you know, you have people in the school system that are trying to control the information And, you know, you say natural law to the average person, and they'll look at you with this dumb look.
What's that? Is that something Congress passed?
People, we'd have a hard time determining what morality, but I absolutely think so. I think that's why you're right about private schools being better, because in a private school, you can absolutely teach morality. But in truth, I will say that morality is better taught at home. It really shouldn't be taught in any school. Ultimately, the person who's going to most impress you with a moral life is not going to be your teacher. It should be your mother or your father or both. They should be people you respect. That's something I'm trying to do with my grandkids. You have to manifest what you're talking about. Walk your talk.
Let me interrupt you. I agree. How do you do that? As a parent, as a grandparent, as just someone influencing, how do you do that? You have to look at yourself. You have to have a willingness to look at yourself. Because if you don't, then, you know, then you're a hypocrite. Do as I do, do as I say, not as I do, type of thing. And you have to have that willingness to genuinely look at yourself if you're going to be genuine. And in order to genuinely bring forward morality in kids, genuinely, it takes a genuine person to do that. Can't do it in an artificial way. You can't be fake and phony. You can't be plastic. Can't be, you know, kind of done in an externalized way. It's got to be genuine. And you're right. The best place for that to come is to come from the parents. It really is the best place for that to come from.
Show them how this really works in the world and how it doesn't work for other people when they're not of this philosophy. And when they see this, they're going to be attracted to it because they're going to see where it leads. And that's what's so important, is to have the respect of your kids and the love of your kids, and to then impart to them the philosophy that has led to your success. And if you do that, how can they help but want to go in that direction? No teacher can possibly do that. And I don't really think they should. I think that's just for people who want to put propaganda going any particular direction in kids' minds. Whether you consider it a moral or an immoral direction, it's wrong both ways. So I suppose the best school is taught with pure facts, and morality should be taught by the parents. I don't see, you know, where there would be any necessity. Now, if you wanted to teach a variety of philosophies, however, I think that would be a good thing. But you wouldn't teach just one. You would teach a number of choices, because there are a number of philosophies to be chosen from. And say, here's what these people believe, and here's what these people believe, and here's what these people believe. And just show them this wide variety of beliefs and philosophies that our human nature has come up with, based on various things at various times. And put it in context to the kids, too. You know, this is a philosophy of people who didn't have radio, TV, the internet, you know, the kind of travel we have now, and so on and so forth. They were very restricted in their exposure to the world. You know, and here's a philosophy that some people had over in this world, that part of the world that was that way. And here, you know, let them see a lot. I have no problem with that either. But teaching one philosophy as if to kind of push the kids in that direction, nah, that doesn't belong in school. That belongs in the hands of the parents. If anybody is going to get the ability to bias the child, it probably ought to be the parents. Otherwise, you're talking about the state taking over the kids, and I know you're not in favor of that. So we're probably in agreement on this, but I just thought I'd point out a few of those little nuances of the topic of natural law. Because, you know, it was a long time ago, and some of the things that would be natural law, we would cringe about, Tom. And you mean we were trying to make it sound like a wonderful thing, but...
Well, let me interrupt once again. You're talking about all the things you enumerated were man-made. You know, those are man-made attitudes, man-made laws, stuff that was written down, etc., etc. The natural law... You know, there is this natural knowing of right and wrong. I keep coming back to that. You know, the experiment with the babies. there is, you know, babies come knowing the difference. It's rudimentary. It's there. They're close to it. They know the difference. And we get separated from that. We get brainwashed from that. We are distracted from that. Because people have all these agendas. You've got all these people that want to promote their particular form of perversion so that it's okay. You know, let's make it official, officially write it into the law, and it'll be okay. It's okay to murder your baby. We'll call it abortion. We'll call it an unviable tissue mass. That's just one example. And we can be proud of it. We'll have abortion pride marches. So we can be proud of it, and we'll all feel good. Make it official, and it'll take the guilt away. No, it won't. It doesn't work. So, right and wrong has not changed. Now, maybe our cultural definition of what's right and wrong, that part has changed. That's not what they were talking about, natural law. I think they were talking about something more fundamental. As far as right and wrong, and it wasn't getting into the nitty-gritty details. They knew when they put the Constitution together that there was a big problem, you know, with the slavery, that was an abomination. It absolutely was. And a lot of them saw it. And of course, some of them that had, you know, some of the colonies that had a vested interest in slavery and having it and keeping it, you know, of course, they twisted their perceptions, and their perceptions were twisted in another way, where it was right. Their culture says it's right to have slaves. Nothing wrong with slaves. Culture says it's okay. It must be right, even though it's wrong.
I assure you, there's probably parts of it that aren't so wonderful. And I think it is better today that we are a little more open-minded, and we don't think it's this big bugaboo that, oh my God, a white woman is dating a black man or married a black man. I got to tell you, that's exactly the situation of my neighbor on one side, and they are one of the best neighbors you could have. And their daughter is exemplary. She's 12 years old, but you would never know that she's only 3 years older than my Asian granddaughter, who herself is brilliant, just a bright kid. But this girl is like quantum leaps. I asked her, I said to my granddaughter, I said, how old would you say she was? And she said, I'd say she was 15 or 16. I said, yeah, I know. Because she's big enough and smart enough, you know. She is so well behaved, so smart, so incredibly worldly. I can't tell you what a good job this couple has done with their daughter. And this is the daughter that, this is the second marriage. I guess his first marriage was to a colored lady, and now it's an interracial. But this is the daughter from his first marriage. And it's just amazing, you know, what a great job they did, you know, and what great neighbors they are. And so, in any case, I'm glad it's not this big bugaboo. I would never want to go back to that. And I think that's one of the things that probably would have been considered quite the normal way of thought back in the Jeffersonian philosophy days.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. Of course, you can find Scott's podcast at scottpodcast.com, the Uncommon Sense Podcast. And again, you know, I just want people to be genuine. Whatever that is, I want people to be genuine, really, really, honestly genuine. And of course, that entails looking at yourself, you know, really trying to be as genuine as possible. And in that knowing of right and wrong is there naturally. You know, and that's really all there is to it. Very, very simple. We're the ones that make it complicated. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. And, you know, I think they've stopped, you know, for right after I started recording, they started unloading the truck. And I think at this point they've stopped because, you know, it's been a number, probably about, I don't know, 10, 20 minutes ago they stopped. They're probably counting it now, and so I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close, and, you know, and they'll probably here in a bit, they'll be bringing the paperwork out, and then I'm either going to go back to the truck stop, or I could go to the company yard there at Marietta. I'll probably go to that, back to that Petro truck stop. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week. Hope you have a great weekend. Weekend's here. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.